Hello from the newsroom of the Financial Times in London. I'm Suzanne Blimpson. After 5 years of military dictatorship, Thai voters have finally had an opportunity to choose their government. But those hoping for a clear and transparent election will have been disappointed. With the result delayed and turnout figures disputed, there's a risk that political turmoil could return to Southeast Asia's second largest economy. Ravi Mathew discusses what happens next with John Reid, Southeast Asia correspondent.
Well, the election is not free and fair. Many wrongdoing has been reported and officials are ignored. And some vote buying happened even in front of the poll station.
That was Thaksin Shinawat, who for years dominated Thai politics as a billionaire politician, but now is contesting the elections from exile. John, results have been trickling out since Sunday, with the opposition alleging irregularities. Just tell us why this election has been so fraught.
This is the first democratic exercise Thailand has had in the nearly 5 years since the military coup of 2014 that deposed a government that never took office, headed by Mr. Thaksin's sister Yingluck Shinawatra. I mean, this is an ongoing theme in Thai politics for many, many decades, where the military has ruled directly or indirectly, and it's emerging as the theme in this election as well.
What do the results of the election show us?
Broadly speaking, it showed Thailand is, as in past elections, a very divided country. You have on the one hand the democratic front parties, and on the other, the pro-military camp that want to keep General Prayut, the current military dictator, and the military in control of the levers of government. Within the democratic front camp, you have seven parties that have agreed to work together, the largest of which is Pheu-Thai, the biggest pro-Thaksin party. This camp has a mass following in the north and east of Thailand, and Pheu-Thai alone is likely to emerge as the largest party in the lower house. We also have a new party called Future Forward, headed by Thanatorn, a charismatic businessman activist, who appears to have come in third place. Again, we don't have a final seat count, who will go with the Democratic Front. Middle of this week, they said that they had enough support for 255 seats in the lower house, which would be enough to give them a working majority, not necessarily enough to get elected in as government because they need support of 250 senators as well who are under control of the junta. On the other side, yes, the Palang Pracharat, the junta party, emerged as the winner of the popular vote and looks likeliest to head the next government because they control the Senate seats. Another force that's worth speaking about is Bum Jai Thai, or Thai Pride, a new party headed by Anutin, another billionaire businessman who is emerging as a kingmaker because he could go either with the democratic camp or with the junta. And it seems that both sides will need his support in order to form a stable government.
What are the suggestions that the opposition is making about why the results perhaps aren't as credible as the junta claims them to be?
It's not just the opposition. There were a lot of questions about the integrity of the vote, both from opposition parties and from the limited number of monitors who were able to do their work in Thailand. On voting day, on the 24th, there were questions about discrepancies between the voter rolls, the numbers of voters registered, and the number of ballots that actually ended up being cast. There were some allegations of vote buying, of which I personally haven't seen proof, and I'll be careful to say that here. The biggest question, and it's a lingering question as I speak, is around the delay in reporting the results, which in every past recent Thai election came out on election night by 9 or 10 p.m., but were delayed for several days and still haven't been reported as I speak.
Explain to us, how will the new government be determined?
Yes, this is the first government to be formed under a new constitution that was drawn up after the military coup with the apparent design of keeping the Thaksin movement out of power and entrenching the rule of the military. The vote for prime minister will be conducted by 750 MPs, 500 in the lower house who were democratically elected, albeit in a flawed and imperfect election, and then 250 senators who will be handpicked by the junta will also have a vote. So this gives an automatic sort of one-third advantage to Palang Pracharat, the pro-junta party, that emerged as the winner of the popular vote and puts them in pole position to form the next government.
If we back up and give a bit of the broader context, why is Thailand so important to the region?
It's important economically. It's also, I mean, there's kind of a bigger story in Southeast Asia now of what seems to be a move away from democratic rule. There's also been a kind of continuing political drama in Thailand where you go through periods of stability and then periods of great unrest. There's a lot of money, most of it Asian, some of it Western, tied up in Thai stocks and bonds. This is a country that experienced a massive financial crisis less than two decades ago and is just coming out of it. So I think it's something that's of interest both for business people, also for watchers of democracy.
You spoke to Thaksin, the billionaire politician, former prime minister. Why is he so vociferous in his opposition to the results?
He's a major player in Thai politics. I mean, this is a man whose movement and followers have won every Thai election since 2001, possibly up to including this election, although we don't have final results yet. He thinks Thailand could do better, in short, and thinks that it did under the governments that he and his sister ran. And he also thinks this election was not free and fair.
Can you just run us through, in a way, the divisions that feed into the politics between, I guess, the urban elite and maybe some of the rural poor who seem to be very supportive of Thaksin?
It's largely regionally based. The supporters of Pheu Thai, his main party, are clustered mostly in northern and eastern Thailand, largely rural poor, who have benefited over the years from populist spending programs championed by his governments. Up against them is the Bangkok elite, sort of royalist and military and civil servants who like the status quo and who absolutely loathe his brand of politics and indeed say it's corrupt and cost the country billions.
How do the politics then work? If Thaksin isn't in the country, his sister's no longer there either. He lives in self-imposed exile.
His absence hasn't actually changed that much, although arguably Pheu Thai has not done as well as it has in recent elections. But the same divisions are there. His followers are still there. Until recently, this was the only party with a mass following, with a real political machine across Thailand. And indeed, they did very well in this election. We don't know quite how well yet. We won't know for certain until May 9th, when final results are announced. That said, it seems like his camp lost some support to new parties, most notably Future Forward, headed by another anti-military billionaire activist figure who does live in Thailand, Mr. Thanatorn, whose party appears to have come in third place. So, I mean, there are voices saying that Thaksinism and Thaksin, that, you know, his time is passing.
Let me talk about the economy, because Thailand is the second biggest economy in Southeast Asia. What are the implications for the economic performance of the country and perhaps even the wider region?
I think Thailand's entering, without doubt, a period of uncertainty. The consultancies that specialize in political risk have been warning this week of enhanced risk. There have been signs that some investors have been taking money out of Thai stocks and bonds. And this, of course, is because of the history of street unrest in Thailand over the past two decades of Thaksinism, where you had the red shirts against the yellow shirts. Some violence, dozens of people killed at one point in 2010. There's a fear that the process could go off the rails. Again, these are two camps pitched against each other. For now, it's a peaceful exercise, but one doesn't know how long that will last.
What is the next stage of the process that we should be watching out for?
So it's a period of coalition building now. Preliminary results are due later this week. Again, we'll see whether they actually come in. And then we're going to have an unusually long waiting and bargaining period because official results only come out on May 9th after the coronation of the new king. We also have to wait that long to see how many seats get allocated to the different parties. So as journalists, we have to do a bit of guesswork, trying to project based on what we know about which party did how well. And they're also amongst themselves bargaining and taking their time. And it's going to be unusually complicated. Again, the Democratic Front parties look like they would have enough MPs to form a slender majority in the House of Representatives and form a functioning government there. But as I've noted, the next government is going to be elected in part by 250 senators handpicked by the junta. Any government that doesn't have their support isn't going to get in, or needs to get, if it's run by the opposition, needs to get a supermajority in the lower house. The same odd arithmetic applies inversely for the pro-junta Palang Pracharat, who can probably get enough votes from their automatic Senate votes to get elected into government, but won't have a stable majority in the House unless they bring along enough other parties.
John, I think a lot to watch in the next few weeks. Thank you very much.
That was Ravi Matu talking to John Reed, our Southeast Asia correspondent. Thanks for listening. Remember, if you're not already a subscriber and would like to discover more FT content, you can find our latest subscription offers at ft.com/offer.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.